Hi, I'm Jerry Kay, and this is the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture audio tour of Eden Landing, located near the town of Hayward, south of Highway 92. Here you'll find a bench just beyond the entrance gate, and while we encourage you to enjoy the 3 miles of Bay Trail in this area, this 20-minute listen and learn experience can be enjoyed in its entirety while sitting on the bench. The tour has two parts. In the first, we speak with John Krause, Associate Wildlife Biologist with the California Department of Fish and Game, and we'll learn about the area from a natural history and land management perspective. In the second part, Ellen Joslyn Junk, a registered professional archaeologist who studies landscapes in the Bay Area, fills us in on the cultural history of the area and its legacy of salt making. Here's John Krause.
Most people who live in the Bay Area have flown in and out of San Francisco Airport at various times, and you look down and you can see this mosaic of shapes and colors. And I think some of the most striking things that you can kind of see from the air, you can get a context with when you're on the ground out here. And so those beautiful colors and sort of esoteric shapes and abstract art that you see from the sky is what you see down here on the ground.
John, from this vantage point on our bench, tell us what we're looking at in each direction, if you would.
To the east of us is the tidal restoration area, and so this is going to be recreating tidal marsh in some areas that haven't seen the tides in quite a long time, number of decades. Off to the west of us are some managed ponds, and we manage those ponds for various water birds. Most specifically on these sets of ponds to the right, they're seasonal ponds, so they may actually not look like ponds while you're here. They may be dry or drier with only a little bit of water. We still consider those ponds, and we manage those ponds for, in this case, more intensive management for the snowy plover, which is a federally threatened species. So we provide nesting habitat for those birds here in the bay in former salt ponds to kind of simulate the habitats they used to use more historically, which were beaches along the coast, and certainly a lot of places and beaches have lots of people and less significant habitat for the birds, and so they've come to depend on these dry salt ponds for breeding habitat. The marsh area off to the west is a restoration project that's been underway for a long time. We're moving forward on a larger restoration project in the South Bay salt ponds. This portion of the Eden Landing Ecological Reserve was the original Eden Landing Ecological Reserve, an 835-acre project. And so over the course of decades, we'll start seeing these tidal marshes restore themselves from more of a open water mud condition, which they'll be starting at, into a more vegetated habitat. And they'll provide habitat for some of our other endangered species, including the salt marsh harvest mouse and the California clapper rail. The vegetation will start encroaching in as the elevation comes up. And what we're talking about in that regard is former marshes that were out here were sitting at a higher elevation than the landscape we have now. And part of that is through the land use history of past uses for salt making and prior to that some agricultural uses. And so this vegetated marsh area will, over the course of decades, become more and more vegetated. There are lots of channels that are in this former area, some relic channels and some that were excavated along historic areas or otherwise in strategic locations to provide good drainage as well as conveyance of floodwaters. What you're probably seeing now at this point is more open water and mud. And again, that vegetation will encroach as the sediments accrete and the marsh plain grows up higher in elevation and supports those vegetated plants that need a certain hydro period or time of inundation with water.
We're seeing also some poles here, white poles. What purpose do they serve?
That's a monitoring transect, and that will help us monitor the development of the marsh over time. And so we'll know how much dirt has accreted to bring the marsh plain up higher, and we'll also be able to do transects to see vegetation development over that period of time as well.
Do you actually hands-on plant plants, or does this happen naturally?
No, the restoration in tidal areas for the most part is done passively, meaning that we don't actually plant plants. We actually let the seeds come in on the tides, and they deposit and they germinate and they'll grow out from there. And so for the most part, we don't actively restore with plants those tidal habitats. Again, it's going to be more dependent on the elevation, and until we get some accretion of some sediment, those plants wouldn't necessarily persist there. And so we're letting nature do the restoration for the most part. I'll point out that there are some areas where we actually do some active planting, and we've been working with Save the Bay to do a community-based restoration out here where there have been planting some of the plants that are in the transition zones between the lower wetland areas and the higher upland areas. There's these critical transitional habitats, which are few and far between in the bay, mostly because the levees are not shallowly graded. They're very steep, and they don't provide a very big band of that habitat area, whereas for this project and in others, in the bay. We've actually graded those levees out into a broader transition, and so a less steep slope will provide a bigger area for those transitional plants. And Save the Bay has been working with community-based volunteers to actually do active planting as well as removing exotic and invasive plants.
And John, tell us how you're working with water here.
Water's coming in through a water control structure or a culvert, and we shallowly flood these ponds so that there are areas where there's water available for foraging for these shorebirds and waterbirds, and then some dry areas also in there, and those provide those nesting habitat opportunities as well.
How does the water get in here?
From the bay coming in, there are creeks, or sloughs as they're called when they're more tidally influenced, and those sloughs will branch all the way up in here to this tidal restoration area. Again, by the bridge, you're standing over Mount Eden Creek. Now, that's a slough that from the bridge goes 2 miles out to the bay, and from where the bridge is inland will flood inland, you know, a mile, and be very, not so much a straight line sort of channel that you would imagine, but a very curvy channel that provides that habitat structure that we want in restored tidal marshes. And so the connection to the bay is these tidal sloughs. And the larger sloughs, of course, are a more obvious connection to the bay. You can see them from the sky. The smaller ones are what branch off of those larger ones as you get further and further back into the marsh plain, and you get smaller and smaller channels. And so those tidal waters that come in on the sloughs are also the waters that we use for these ponds that we see out in this area. We manage these ponds through water control structures or pipes or culverts, as most people would more commonly call them. We can control how much water comes in, we can control how much water goes out. And so these ponds are managed in the sense that we've got water coming in and out at various amounts at various tide levels, and during seasons we change how much water comes in and out so that, for example, in the wintertime we may want to flood a pond up and have it be deeper water for overwintering waterfowl. It may be in the spring and summer we draw these ponds down for the springtime, for the spring migration, shallow water for shorebirds to come through, and then allow those ponds to dry up for the summer to some degree, providing those nesting habitat areas. And then as the fall season comes along and nesting is completed, we can reflood those ponds for shorebird foraging. And then again, as the winter comes and the rainfall comes and the ducks are here overwintering, we flood those ponds up even more to provide overwintering habitat for ducks. And then we will still manage some of these ponds as shallow water so that we've got good foraging for some of the shorebirds that are still out here. But seasonally, there's big changes out here. And whether you're out here in the winter, the spring, the fall, or the summer, they can look dramatically different from this very point that you're standing on. We've got a wide range of species that use these historic baylands, from the vegetated tidal marsh, the more endangered species because those habitats have been shrunk down so much, but also these salt pond habitats, which when they were making salt provided incidentally to salt making wildlife habitat. And now that we've taken some of these areas in as part of restoration projects, we continue to provide a salt pond like environment. However, we are not using these ponds to concentrate salt. We're making wildlife habitat now.
And John, as we sit in this extraordinary location and look out at these wetlands, please tell us again why wetlands are important.
Wetlands provide not only habitat features for the birds that depend on them on the Pacific Flyway, but also salt marshes provide significant flood protection for us that are going to be more and more important over time, especially as sea level rise becomes a greater reality for us.
John, this has been a wonderful audio tour, and I'm curious what other kinds of changes you would like people to notice depending on when they arrive here. And I was just thinking about those colors you mentioned at the beginning.
We'll see that color scheme and shape of the bay and the shape of the sloughs change over time. So when you come out here and you stand on the bridge, for example, along Mount Eden Creek, that's a historic slough that used to be part of the salt making process going way back when shallow draft schooners would come up and off-haul the salt and then bring supplies from San Francisco. It's a very changed landscape from what was historically out here, which was largely all tidal marsh with some ponds within the marshes. But some of those features we'll see recreated as part of this project. And of course, if nature takes its course along those lines, we'll see more of those features persist naturally as opposed to something that's created or engineered as part of a project. We'll see lots of birds out here using those ponds. They're foraging out here, they're nesting out here. We've got thousands, hundreds of thousands of ducks that overwinter out here as well. And so some of the more striking features, I think, are just the concentrations of wildlife in really staggering numbers. Single day counts at times in the spring of a million birds.
And my thanks to John Krause. So clearly, what you actually see when you visit Eden Landing will depend on when you are here. But the salt-making history of the area is a story that won't change based on the timing of your visit. And here to tell us that story in part two of our audio tour is Ellen Joslin Junk.